Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Thank you very much for your time and for giving me the opportunity to present tonight. My name is Cathal Friel. I'm one of the co-founders of Open Orphan PLC. One of my other co-founders here is Maurice Tracy. Might stand up, speak with you. And the third co-founder is Brendan Buckley. What we all three of us in common, we've done a number of startups exits in the past, and this one, Brendan and Maurice is a lot longer experience in pharmaceuticals. I wouldn't be a natural pharmaceutical, more a finance person. There's a third IPO I've done, but the last one, let's be honest, I think I got lucky, was Amrit Pharmaceuticals. I put that together, and you'll see over the coming weeks, it's about to transition from a 50 million market cap to a 300 million market cap. So it's taken away the risk. So really, talk about risk. In this company, what we've put together is in Amrit. It was the first time I got involved in pharmaceuticals. It is still, most of you think pharmaceuticals, oh dear. Boom or bust, up or down, one or the other. And being honest with you, my worry, I tried to sell Amrit last year. My worry was the big high risk trial. If it succeeds, share price doubles. If it fails, you know what happens. It goes in the toilet. So this company, but now, fortunately, Amrit's done a huge deal. So now it's got 150 million in revenue. So that mitigates the risk of that boom and bust. So this company we put together, and look, being perfectly honest, this company, Open Orphan, if you're interested in it, it's really taking a bet, taking a risk, taking a backing on the three founders. And I'll talk more about the three founders in a minute. But really what we're trying to do is, look, we're building, we call it leading, it's very much European focused, but it's a pharma services company. And what's pharma services got to do with boom and bust? Services, everything we want to do is cost plus. Profitable services, no trials, no boom and bust. And the most profitable companies in the pharma industry are, guess what, are the services companies. Brendan, our chairman and co-founder, was involved in Icon PLC. Very few people here probably heard about it. It's based in Dublin. Again, very few Irish people know about it. It employs 27,000 people and is the world's seventh biggest clinical trials company. It grows at 25% compound, never takes a risk in his life. Brendan sold his last company to it in 2013 when it had 800 million market cap. Today it's got 8 billion. And it doesn't take risks. Basically, it just provides high value, expensive, no risk services. So really, to make a long story short, we're trying to just put a pharma services company together. And then we're adding some digital overlay, to use a Tony Blair word, to maybe sex it up a bit. So really, that's where the digital part comes from. So let me talk to you through who are the founders, because being perfectly honest with you, it's a small cap. We're tiny. We're 15 or 16 million market cap. We aim to try and double that over the coming year and maybe double it again. We're still a micro cap. So given so small, you really have to decide, are these three people worth backing? Do you trust them? Do they know what they're talking about? But look, quick background. My background, I say I'm very happy and proud. I put a pharmaceutical company together that's now doing really, really well. And the share price even bounced 10% today. That wasn't bad. But I was worried, genuinely, a lot of my family money tied up in Amrit. I'm still the third biggest shareholder. I put it together, did the hard work, did a reverse into another shell, and the share price went down for 2 years. But now suddenly, because the market was worried about big high-risk trials, I held my shares, sold some money last year, and the money I came off the board was to fund this new one, Open Orphan. Before that, look, I'm not a bad name. I'm a stockbroker. For 15 years, I used to, in the stockbrokers, I used to sell companies. I co-founded Marion Stockbrokers, and we sold it, and this one here, and then we set up this one here. But when I was a stockbroker, my main task was the head of corporate finance. I was actually in the selling company side rather than selling stocks. I'll give you a quick run through Maurice. He's here. Maurice's background, basically, he was co-founder, and he knows co-founded Hybrigen. The big one is GMI. He was co-founder of GMI. It did a 400 million Series B in year three in Dublin. And in year four, it got sold to WuXi NextCode. And that basically built Ireland and one of Europe's largest genomic databases of DNA of patients. we're narrowing that in to rare disease patients. He's been around a number of startups, successful ones, inventor of 80 patents, and a director of Life Sciences Science Foundation, and he's a venture partner at Arch. So we've kind of diversified experiences, both the science background, but also the venture capital, where he had been investing both his own money and other people's money. The third and final person you're backing, if you're interested in getting involved in buying shares in this company, is Brenton Buckley. Brenton is slightly older than the rest of us. He's 67, but he thinks he's still 16. He's back in America this week. He was in America 2 weeks ago. He whizzes around the place. When he travels to America, he doesn't travel up the front of the bus, so he's not a good front. He travels like all the rest is in coach, but he travels extensively with us and other ones. He said he did sell his last company. It was called Firecrest to Icon. It had 800 million market cap when he sold it in. His company got 50 or 60 million. He became their chief medical officer. And during that 7 year period, it went from 800 million to 8 billion. So he helped me put this together with Morris, saying, look, you don't need to take risks in the pharmaceutical industry to make really good money. Just grow, compound at 25%. His other real claim to fame, he's 30 years experience in clinical research. I have a book here, I forgot. He's one of the few people who wrote a book on speeding up clinical trials. And very importantly for we are, he also co-authored, he did a lot of work with the European Medicines Agency with a colleague here at Oxford. The two of them co-authored the orphan drug protocols at the EMA. So he kind of knows his way around the consulting. So look, our background, finance, pharma. One thing all three of us have done a startup and sold at least one of the startups. Why are we talking about orphan drugs? Well, look, first of all, this is not purely orphan. Orphan drugs is a sexy, it's the fastest growing space. So we're providing services. What we're trying to do is a small company, and let's see where we got, build it up. Everything is cost plus, no risks. And we're trying to, let's say, hitch our wagon to this space, the orphan drug space. We're not exclusively orphan drugs by any means, but why we're highlighting orphan drugs is as follows. First of all, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, there was no orphan drugs in the market in Europe and North America. They changed the rules to speed it up. Last year, 58% of all new drugs were orphans. So that's a pretty stunning performance in 15 years, coming from zero to there. However, the piece I much prefer is that EU pharma consulting is a high margin but highly fragmented. There's a bunch of big companies, there's 10, 15 monsters, Icon, Brenton's companies, Charles River, a bunch of them, they have about 60% of the market. Across Europe, there's hundreds of these little mom and pops, so they're between 4 and 20 million. Our plan is to consolidate a small number of those little ones, get to 30 or 40 million, and being honest with you, I get the trouble for saying a lot of time is, that's when we get our money back. So you know how we get our money back and when we consolidate, you either consolidate or be consolidated. It's got rapid growth, 8.8% compound average growth. That's pretty good. This is the overall pharma. 9.9 billion in the USA alone, annualized. It's a pretty good market. And then within the orphan drugs, there's 2,500 products currently with the FDA orphan drug designation. That just means there's 2,500 coming through that pipeline of FDA. Not bad, you think 15 years ago there was zero. And then orphan drugs, people say, what are they? Orphan drugs are basically drugs for rare diseases. And the reason they're called orphans, we all know orphan as a child is rare. There's not that many of them. So basically rare diseases, the drugs were called, instead of calling them just rare drugs, they're called orphan drugs. So they're not like cancer, they're not like asthma, they're not like heart disease, they're for unique, but those diseases, there's actually 30 million Europeans, 10% of the population, has some form of a rare disease. So it's a big market. It's a very attractive market. When you get approved, you get special dispensations for it. You get 7 years exclusivity in North America. You get 10 years, regardless of your IP, regardless. So the governments have encouraged big pharma by giving these. The price, which is a dirty word these days, it's generally 4.5 times more expensive than normal ones. And this is really interesting. You get a priority review voucher, and Amrit got one of those. And 2 years ago, I was going, what's a priority review voucher? Basically, the FDA, if you get orphan drug and you get a designation, you can apply for that. And that means when you get approved, your drug can be speeded up. But that's what you basically do. You're allowed to sell that voucher. And they vary in price up to 350. It's another way of funding you. Much smaller trial size, 62% less. And this is the big one. America, as usual, when it comes to anything to do with pharmaceuticals, is a bit ahead of the game. They've been there's 520 orphan drugs on sale in America today. There's only 180 in Europe. So quite a bit of our services is helping these American products come to Europe. So that's why we're focusing on the servicing these orphans. We're not going to be making them, we're not going to be selling them. It's servicing those and helping those companies come. How are we going to do it? First of all, within Open Orphan, we're listed. 28th of June, we listed it through the same way I listed Amrit Pharmaceutical. I did a reverse takeover of an existing AIM company. And the AIM company we took over was Venn Life Science. So really, our entire model is we're going to build up a couple of services companies in here, bolt them together. Everyone has to be doing services to pharmaceutical companies in Europe. Very similar. That's us. We did the first bolt-on. We'll do another bolt-on here. And then we're just adding on digital services we've already put together. So this arm here is the virtual rep. I'll come to that in a minute. That's digital. And there's a genomic health database. That's what Morris has already done before in GMI. And he's putting it together. And this is a really interesting space. So really we're saying we're combining high margin pharmaceutical services and I get in trouble for that. We're sexing the whole thing up with some digital services and data offerings. And the reason that data is very important, traditionally, and even 3-4 years ago, when I helped put Amrit together, Joe Wiley and the guys who knew what they were doing, I was in the pharma, I said, look, it's really important to own the drug. If you own the drug, you can sell it and you get all the revenues. Life moves forward. Today, I'm of the belief, and a lot of people are, owning or controlling the database that has the data to develop the drugs is becoming almost as valuable. Probably not as valuable, some people might say. So that's what we're doing here. We're trying to control a data bank that has genomic data that big pharma will use to develop drugs so we can sell that over and over and over again. So it's just, it's a new way of looking at it. So really that's as simple. We acquired Venn, bolted it on, did our IPO, and the plan now is gently, quietly and carefully, because look, we've put a lot of our own money in. I'm the largest shareholder, I put 2 million of my own cash in to fund Open Orphan. Brenton and Morris invested as well. And in the IPO, having been, this is the third IPO did, when you do the roadshow, the fund managers say, oh, Carl, very smart, you put a lot of money. How much did you put in at the IPO? So the IPO I put, because I knew I did, I put 300,000 of my own cash into the IPO at 5.6p and locked it up for 3 years. Every Open Orphan shareholder, Morris, Brent, we're all locked up for 3 years because this is a 2-3 year journey. So there's going to be no sellers on our side. What was wrong with Venn and why do we buy it so cheap? Venn Life Science has been around for years, 6, 7, 8 years, listed in AIM, struggled. But a very interesting company, did like 14.5 million revenues last year, didn't make money. Did 16, 17 million the year before, didn't make money. Pharma services, there's something wrong if you're not making money. It's a business that should be minimum 15% net profit. You should be targeting 20, 25, 30% net profit. What was wrong with Venn? It basically was desperately undercapitalized. I only raised 11 million since IPO. Most of it was spent on acquisitions. It had fabulous customers. Janssen, which is part of Johnson & Johnson. Prometeor, an orphan drug company. Born Engler, one of the largest German pharma players. GMAP, Servier, one of the biggest French ones. Galapagos and Pharming. So it has Rolls-Royce customers providing services. Very sticky, but it just didn't capitalize itself. It didn't integrate itself well. And being honest with you, it could have been run a lot better. Our goal, recapitalize it. We've done that. At the IPO, we raised 4.5 million, almost exclusively from institutions because we felt, well, look, let's get a small bit of money, fix Venn. Most of our acquisitions will all be in paper. So we don't need a ton of cash to do this. Restructure, we're working on that. Get it profit making. And this is the big point, the opportunity to invest at the moment, or what I would say, why would you invest in us? Other than we're hungry, we're going to roll the dice, we're going to work harder for the next year or two, is that all our peer group are valued at 2 to 3 times sales because they're making 25% pre-tax profits. So all the other services companies in the pharma space, some of them higher, are on 2 to 3 times. We bought Venn, at 4 million, despite it doing, so we bought it at a quarter, 1/4 to 1/5 times revenues. So we're now fixing it, vended 14.5 million last year. We can't really say with guidance what we're going to do this year, other than that we're on track to where we want to go. And we're hoping to be re-rated over the coming months. At the moment, we're trading at about 1x sales. If we do what we say we do, we should be trading at substantially more than that. The target would be we should be trading at 2 to 3 times revenues. But we'll let the market decide what's fair value. And then the big one with Venn, adding on orphan drug specialties and particularly the proprietary data platforms. And I'll talk you through a little bit what they look like. How are we going to grow revenues? Everybody knows that we did 14.5 million last year, and that's primarily in Venn. Increasing that by 20 or 30% will be a pretty good going, but we won't double or triple it. The simplest thing I say is a highly fragmented market, lots of small players. Really, what we want to do, we are of no interest to be bought out. We have no real interest to the big players till we get ourselves to 30 or 40 million revenues. So we set our target, add additional 30 million high margin revenues by 2022. As simple as that, we've got 2 deals. Maximum 3 to be done, and they're buying them. We're not going to pay cash for them because we pay cash. It's a services company, you know what happens. You hand the guy a check and he says goodbye, walks out the door and you're carrying the baby. So we pay them like us, we'll pay them stock. They'll be bought over 4 years, a small amount of stock equity up front, another bit after 12, another bit after 24, another bit after 36 months. And every time they get stock, locked up for a minimum of 24 months. And the plan is we'll be all gone within 24 or 36 months before those acquisitions start selling the stock. Part of the reason you're wondering why am I double booked tonight doing this one and doing LSE. We did no activity in July and August. We're trying to fix the company. We are making it clear, having been the third IPO, I want to be involved in this market for a long time to come. This is not a classic pump the share price, talk to loads of investors, then hey, presto, just before Christmas, guess what? He's raising money. Tom Winterford, who you can love or hate, interviewed me last night. He's listen, Cathal Friel, smart ass Irish guy. Are you not raising money? And he says, answer your question. I said, Tom, I can absolutely assure you, and you come after me, there is no fundraise anytime soon coming up. But what we are doing, we will be making an acquisition. And the higher and stronger our share price is, the less equity we give away. So that's being honest what we're doing. There's no, we raised 4.5 million. We also sold a kind of loose shareholding that was in another company, and we got 550,000. So we've ended up at 5 million. That will take us well down the road where we want to go. So that's why we will be talking a lot to the market in the coming weeks and months, is we want the share price to be re-rated. We're currently in 1x sales. We feel we should be in 2x sales and higher. And we will be doing something on or before Christmas. We've guided the market that, and that will be using our stock. We won't be writing checks in cash. So basically, bolting these on, rapid revenue growth. It's too hard to grow organically. As everybody, anybody here in the business, growing more than 20 or 30% a year would kill you. We want to try and double every year. That would be all with acquisitions. Everything has to be high margin and the valuation arbitrage. We can buy these smaller companies for 1x revenues, and we want to be valued at 2 to 3x, if not higher. Next, the virtual rep bit. What's this piece? So really what we're saying here, this is just bolting on a couple of services company. We'll keep the family of names, so the customers will know them, the staff will know them, and we'll integrate the back. So that's what we're doing here, just bolt on one or two more companies to Open Orphan. The banner will be Open Orphan. By the way, the name, Open Orphan means opening European markets for orphan drugs. It's a kind of nice handy name. A lot of the big services players who might take us out, they will probably keep that name, say that we've got this orphan drug business in Europe that does services. So the name was built originally, and even the indication is we put it together, one could say almost to sell day one. There's the markets we're servicing, European markets. So there's a bit of thought in the company, it was almost build it for sale, basically. So let me come to the virtual rep. What's in there? Virtual rep, an access platform. The pharmaceutical industry is like the tobacco industry. And it's a bit like the oil and gas industry, 5, 6, 7. It is the most profitable industry in the world. GSK, Pfizer, they make tens of billions of money. tobacco industry, oil and gas, what's the three got in common? They don't embrace change. They make a shed load of money. They pay the staff far too much. They pay a nice dividend, most of them, but they don't use digital. They don't use computers. Pharmaceutical sales reps in Europe are the most expensive sales reps in the world. They drive around expensive cars, 5 series BMWs in most cases, and visit. They don't do any of this call center business. So look, long story short, we've put together as a virtual rep. It's just basically bringing digital engagement that nearly any other industry in the world uses. It's doing a call center, it's setting up meetings, and really what we're doing ultimately, we've put a database of the 4,000 people in Europe who sell orphan drugs, basically, or who prescribe them, the doctors. And these are called the physicians or the KOLs, key opinion leaders. We provide engagement between them and the pharmaceutical companies. And how we do it is very simple. We get pharmaceutical companies, because we have them all in our books, they pay us a certain amount of money. Our little call center in Dublin will set up calls with the rep, will say the pack is delivered to them. And then the virtual rep sets up a conference call, a webinar. And most of these consultants who are very busy, they don't want to see a rep coming through his door because they're busy looking after their patients. He will schedule it at a time that suits him, usually quite late in the evening, over the weekend. And the pharmaceutical companies will talk him through it. End of it, we hand them over, email, pharmaceutical consultant who's selling the product, pharmaceutical prescriber, doctor, get to know each other, move on. And we target those and we charge a lot of money for it. No pharmaceutical company in Europe is using that at the moment. And so simple. Virtually every other industry in Europe uses that. So that's what we call our virtual rep. So it's basically bringing pharmaceuticals, and we can overlay that very simply to any of the customers that are currently on the van books. Next piece, I'm conscious of time. I want to run over, give you time to ask questions, see, do I really know what I'm talking about? This piece is the genomic health database. And what does that involve? And again, that is just bringing a low-cost digital piece to our services. Bear in mind, the main business is here. This is where revenues are, with all those nice companies, Boehringer Ingelheim, Servier, Johnson & Johnson. And we're offering these services in. And they're all, this is built, and it's on a low-cost basis, trying to encourage them to start with, say, try the virtual rep. And then more importantly, try the genomic database. And what's the genomic database? It's simply nearly every new drug that the companies we're helping service over here are looking at something with a gene therapy, a genetic mutation, and they're looking for databases where they can see what's wrong with these patients. So really what we're putting together is a low-cost platform here. And how does it work? Basically, Open Orphan's genomic health data platform is capturing highly valuable genetic data in a low-cost manner. You're about to ask, how do you get it in a low-cost manner? Morris's last company, how most people do this, you go out and take the blood, you send it off to China or wherever else, they do a genomic DNA, and you come back to the genome. Quite expensive. However, rare disease patients have a lot of this data already. They've got lots of, because they're trying to parents and doctor, what's wrong with this child? They've done lots of genome sequences, so they're sitting on hundreds of thousands of data. And guess what? The only place in the world, Europe, GDPR, those lovely four letters, it's a pain in the ass for nearly every business, except if anybody in the room would like to see their dental records tomorrow, or any medical records, you just send a letter to your doctor. Dear dentist, I gather you've got dental x-rays belonging to me. Under GDPR rules, please send me a copy. See what turns up in the post. And if you don't send me a copy, I'll report you. And that's everybody in Europe can do that. Any data held by you in Europe, anywhere, particularly medical, you own that copy. The dentist is only using it. So these rare disease patients, all over Europe, there's hospitals with tons of records on them. And all we're saying to the rare disease patients is that, look, if you write a letter to the hospital and say, under GDPR rules, give me that hundreds of thousands of beautiful data belonging to me. And what we've put together, we're not going to talk to all those patients, there's millions of rare disease patients, but there's a couple of hundred patient advocacy groups across Europe, and they are charities acting for these patients. They're trying to do two things, provide better care for them and promote to find new drugs. So we're saying to patient advocacy groups, tell your patients to share their data with us. And how do you do that? We've set up a server, and we'll host, corral, and manage their data, So the patient advocacy group says, and then we will then use that data. Big pharma can come and look at it, access it, play around, but they pay a lot of money for that. And the fees for access, we will split with the patient advocacy group. We can't give that money to the patient because that's like paying for blood, but we can share it. So we've now across Europe about 200 organizations promoting send your data to the Open Orphan server. And we never, and the key part, there's loads of other companies brokering, selling genome, but the genetic data is coming very important. It's a bit like a fingerprint. Nobody in the room would sell their fingerprints, would you? Because there's only one fingerprint. The same, people are worried, oh, I've given away my genome. So we're doing here, we're making it really clear, the data will never leave our server. It won't go to China, it won't go to India. It will always stay in the server. Pharma companies can look, can play around with it, but it's almost you may not touch, they can't take it away. But they'll pay a lot of money for that. And if the patient wants his data back, contact us, we return it and delete it. So it's a really simple model. We don't pay for it. We just host it for them. To use Morris's word, we corral it. We keep it on our server. We've automated it. We tell all the patient advocacy groups, look, download this letter, send it to your patients. But like you sending your note to a dentist tomorrow, I'd like to see my, and this is digital now, do you want, I'd like to see my dental x-rays. You want to want, just, if you ask your dentist, he's 30 days to give you a copy of your dental x-rays or any data he holds. So we're using GDPR, it's very simple. So really, we aim to become the leading broker of rare disease patient data in Europe. We're sticking rare disease, that's our little space. Low cost, basically it's, we're not paying, but we're hosting the data. It's suitable for large pharma companies as they often are looking for specific anonymized data to help their discovery programs. But it's also invaluable for helping new merchants. So look, it's one of these simple models. Anybody can copy this. But because we've chosen this little space, we're going to do rare disease patients, we're going to do orphan drugs. There's no, in a year or two's time, I'm sure other people will copy us. But once this gets moving, people will say, well, we can give around a few of them, but we're ahead of the game in that. And we're not spending, this is like $500,000 investment. This is not tens of millions. Bear in mind, most of this was Morris, mine, our own personal money. Digital health data platforms are one of the hottest investments. You already know that. There's loads of them around the world. We're over here. It's a low-cost one. There's loads of them. You copy that. But we're the only one doing this. We were crawling a large database of data together. Healthcare data is in huge demand. There's the price paid per patient for snapshots of data. And again, we expect rare disease to come out in the premium to this here. So we believe in a very short period of time, I mean within the first year, to have sufficient data on our platform to be generating quite attractive revenues. And the pharma company Baronine pays for access. We're going to try and get milestone payments. If they develop a drug, they pay more. And we just keep this large data bank. And the really interesting part is, it never leaves our server. If the patient wants his data back, ping, goes straight back. So in summary, what have we? We believe we've reasonably, look, we go, of course I would say it's a fabulous, compelling, you've heard enough that you hear this every month, but we think we have a good investment case. It's a new management team. We have a track record of building successful businesses. Morris, and you're really, genuinely, if you need to speak to Morris tonight, chase me, you're backing Morris, myself, and Brendan, really, we put our money in. Collectively, the management team are the largest shareholder group. We've got over 30% of the company. Most of our investors to date have been institutions. We didn't go around any of the retail brokers during the fundraise. We thought, you know, they would just get institutions and see where it goes there. And we talked to the retail market when we've stabilized the company. Most people felt we couldn't fix Venn. Venn was 1.5p last year when I put in some rescue money into it. I had to pay the payroll in March because they ran out of money. We suspended the share price at 2.5p in May to do the deal. And we said, we're going to relist at 5.6. People said, oh, it'll never stay up there. In July, it got ahead of itself. It ran up to 8.3. And we said, got our head down in August to fix the company, came back down to 6. And then this last week, we started getting moving again. So we'll see a bit of movement in the share price. We're not going to be obsessing with the share price. We think it should move substantially ahead where it is, but we'll let the market decide on that. What else have we? We're chasing the fast-growing market for orphan drugs. It's one of the fastest-growing market sectors. Look, most people think, well, what's about orphan drugs? It's basically just a nice tagline. We are doing loads of services to all sorts of pharma, but we're the only one sort of saying we're the kind of orphan drug specialist. Nobody else in Europe seems to have tagged onto it. It's a good space to have. We have a very clear four-prong strategy. That really should be three-prong strategy. It's basically roll up a couple of services companies, introduce the virtual rep business, which is basically almost like the Facebook world, the Mondeo driving sales reps, and the genomic database. So Open Orphan, we believe, will generate substantial shareholder returns. We're looking at a dividend within 2 years and a clearly defined exit strategy post-scale up. And we'll be very careful. We don't want to panic any of our staff. We don't want to panic any of our customers saying, oh, these guys rolled up and selling it. But look, it's a market. You consolidate. And if we stop consolidating, you get consolidated. So that's kind of a whistle-stop tour. Maybe I'll hand it back over to questions. Thank you.
Is the virtual rep business live and generating revenues? Or if not, what's the likely timescale on that?
The virtual rep, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that, we've built most of that with the database intact. And we're looking at generating revenues as we approach the year end of it. At the moment, we're rolling that out to pharmaceutical companies.
After the Woodford fiasco and the issues with the institutional investment investing in nanocaps, I think he had Itaconix, etc. I don't think he had Nuformix. But do you think there's a concern that your institutional investors will become shaky if things start to turn around with regard to, you know, stopping investing in liquid, you know, smaller companies?
Yeah, look, again, depends on how you view Woodford. I think, look, so many companies he funded should never have been funded. He funded one or two in Dublin. I wouldn't have given them cash. I think Woodford, if you look, goes back. Look, pharma companies traditionally, almost pre-Woodford, were funded by pharma companies, small caps. Our view, we're sticking to services. We're also setting to try and generate daily liquidity. And our previous two companies, I set out, and this again with a stockbroker hat, and that's why you'll see and hear a lot of me every week, every month. People give out about AIM, say, oh, AIM's a crap market, including my colleagues now in Amrit. Joe Wiley's always like, oh, AIM's crap. I said, Joe, you just have to generate liquidity. To answer this, again, is really Brendan, 67-year-old, he's one of the six people executive team who ran Icon. They took it from 800 million market cap 2013 to 8 billion last year. Before he came in, he says, you've got to meet the rest of the C-suite. Every with a C in front of his name. Chairman, CEO, CFO, COO, and Brendan, CMO. A hard, fast rule. One third of every day, one third of every week, one third of every month, one third of every year, talking to shareholders, doing investor relations, managing that share price, doing things, and then the other two thirds doing your normal day job. So to answer your question, I think, look, Woodford, it's passing through. Bear in mind, where did Woodford make the most of his money? Somebody should tell me, he probably should be, cigarettes. His original high yield income fund was, he discovered 15 years ago, tobacco companies threw off an 8% yield and grew by 6% a year. And like when he strayed away from that, he was in the GSK and Pfizer. GSK and Pfizer, big dividend, grew at 6% a year. And then he thought he'd sex it up. Shouldn't use, that's the word we're using. And he went into the zero income. So I think, look, he's moving away. And the normality might return. And there was a lot of companies that he funded that probably shouldn't have been funded. So it's probably normality will return. Does that answer your question? Kind of?
Hi, over here.
Sorry, apologies.
Thank you. So I worked in the pharma industry for 28 years.
Oh, sorry, hopefully I didn't insult you too much.
Oh, no, absolutely not. No. But over that time, I've seen the physician rep relationship change and mature. Mm. And it's got to the point now where it's not that physicians don't really want to see reps in the offices. They just don't want to see reps at all. They want information, and that's why companies are going towards the MSL model, medical scientific liaison, who can talk off-label and more broadly, and going away from reps. So I just wonder if you could comment on that with relation to your virtual rep model.
Yeah, let me take you back this piece here. I didn't want to dwell because we wanted to give you a whistle-top tour tonight off. And that's a very good question. Traditional sales rep, and what, expensive, limited? Look, but we all forget, the typical consultant who prescribes drugs was oncology, cancer drugs, or rare disease drugs, they're very well paid, as you know. They're earning between 200,000 or 300,000 or 2 or 3 million. They've got every 15-minute slot, bang, bang, dealing with a patient, billable hours. The rep comes in, let me show you this drug. No, go away, another rep. So what they want is like that. There is. In the orphan drug space, a lot of them, well, all we're doing here is that we've put together the 4,000 main physicians in Europe who deal with rare disease patients. Nobody has done it. And then we're just, it's really simple. There's a little call center in Dublin, 2 or 3 kids in our basement, basically. And they're ringing up the pharma companies and saying, look, we will give you, we'll promote, we'll set up 480 meetings per year. That's as easy as pie. And we basically just drop a mail pack in the post, send an email afterwards, sure they've got it, set up the webinar. At the end of the webinar, Mr. Pharmaceutical Rep, get to know, you've just spoken to the physician, or the fancy name, the KOLs, get to know each other, hand them over, go and do another one. And that's literally what we're doing. Now, they are doing it somewhat, but nobody's really doing it in the orphan drugs. So all we're saying, we're cutting the traditional rep out. It's then the pharma company takes it from there, and you've almost allowed the pharma company to speak directly to the physician who's prescribing the drugs. And we've discovered most of them want this speaking as a webinar on Friday night at 10 o'clock when he's sitting home having a glass of wine. And because most of these companies are on the West Coast of States or on the East Coast, it suits them as well. It's not for everybody, but it's just, it's trying to bring some of them more. And you probably saw, like, there's still an awful lot of additional sales reps in the pharma industry in Europe. Thank you very much for your time.
PR World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.